Everything in life is a choice. There are times when you stand up for what you believe because you feel strong or you're capable of doing it. And there are times when you just give in and the fight isn't worth it. I often say to my accountant, who's always fighting the IRS about everything, and I always tell him, I am not the kind of a person who's willing to spend $100 to save $50 to prove that I am right. If you're going to bill me $100 to save me $50, I just soon send the $50 in and call it even, all right? You have to understand that when you don't stand up for your principles or for what you want to do or what you believe, that's a choice too. Here's an example. Visiting relatives, a problem for most people. When I would arrive, because I live out of town, I live several thousand miles away from my hometown and my wife's hometown, visiting relatives becomes something that you end up doing, right? And a lot of times you would rather not do that. And you feel oftentimes abused, or you got to go on an afternoon when you'd rather just be watching a football game or going out and playing with your kids or just going for a walk or being alone or any number of things, right? Or just taking a nap. But instead you find yourself on your way to visit Uncle Harry or Aunt Sally or somebody that you really aren't crazy about seeing. I used to feel that this was just a part of life's victim game, that once in a while you have to be a victim. Or I used to think of it as a compromise, all right? That you sometimes have to compromise, and you hear that. You sometimes have to compromise. I don't think you ever have to compromise. I think that everything you do in life is a choice. And when I go to visit a relative, because let's say my wife would like me to go with her to visit her aunts and uncles or her parents or whatever it may be, and I would rather do something else, I'm not compromising by going. I know that it makes my wife feel terrific to have me go with her to these places. And the result is that I have made a choice for my wife to feel terrific by going there with me. And that's a better choice than having her feel alienated by not going. I've still made the choice. I've made the choice, and the result that I get from it is that my wife appreciates it and feels good because I do that. So it must make me feel better as a human being to please my wife than it does to just simply please myself. So I'm still pleasing myself, all right? And it's not a compromise in that sense. Now, once you make the decision to go, then you can do it with gusto. You can do it with fun, and you've made the decision now that you're going to go. And the reason that you're making it is still an internal choice that you have. You're not a victim. Your priorities are now established. You would rather have your wife feel good than stay home and be by yourself or whatever you were going to do. Obviously, that's why you're going, all right? So now you know why you're going, right? And it has to do with your own motivation. Now you're going. Now you can go with a lot of misery and look forward to, you can say to yourself things like, well, we're only staying 20 minutes because we're going to have a lousy time. Every time we go to Uncle Harry's, it's always lousy, and he's going to be all upset, and he'll probably be drunk, and I'm going to have a terrible time. And you can set your mind with all of this poisonous kind of stuff that is destined to make the experience really one of you being a victim and feeling rotten. Or you can say, you know, I'm going to have a terrific time. I'm going to talk to Harry. I'm going to be there for whatever amount of time that I choose to be there. I mean, many people will go to a party with the expectation that they have to leave in a half hour because they're going to be having a lousy time. And they've already got it planned. Okay, we'll have a lousy time for half an hour, then we'll leave. Right? And they spend their life having lousy times. Right? Instead of going with the expectation that I can have a great time. I'm open to it all. It can be a terrific experience for myself. And so the second thing that you do is once you've made your decision to go, you make a decision to make it a miracle, to make it a wonderful time, to make it an experience that is not one that's going to victimize you. And the only way to do that is through your thinking. And when you look for nice things and you expect it to be nice, you suddenly see things in Harry that you never saw before. Suddenly Aunt Sally really isn't such a bad person, or she's really interesting, or she's got a great story to tell. Everybody's got a great story to tell. And all you have to do is stop being so concerned with having a miserable time and at least allow yourself to be neutral or positive, which is always better. And before long, you walk away and you're laughing and you're having a good time. And you might have spent 2 or 3 hours and you walk away from those kind of experiences. I do very often think, you know, they really are nice people. They really do have a lot to offer. It's really interesting to assess, you know, life in this manner. I find that everybody I meet is a novel. Every human being, I look at it that way. And I even say, when I sit down in a plane next to a stranger, I will often say to them, I wonder why we're sitting next to each other on this plane. And they'll look at me like, oh boy, have I got a weirdo with me. But by the time it's over, by the time the flight is over, very often we know why. You know, sometimes I say nothing, but many times I feel that everybody out there has their own novel in them. So wherever you're going in life, as long as there's going to be people there, unless you're going to solitary confinement, and then you've got to learn that the cockroaches have a novel too, if that's where you're going to be. But if you're going to any place where there are going to be people, and you're open to just letting them pour out their story, people will do it. And life, instead of being this ugly, dull, victimized kind of experience, becomes this miraculous adventure, which is always terrific. And it's always an attitude. It's always an attitude.
On the whole quality of complaining and whining, neurotics complain. Neurotics whine. Neurotics find fault. They don't like the way things are going. Things are always so bad. Things are never going to get any better. I just know that. They find fault almost everywhere you go. You ever get around people like that who are always finding fault with everything? And then there are people over here who kind of accept the world the way it is, but they really don't feel like they're active doers about it. And over here, you see, I think there are critics and complainers, and there are people who accept things, and then there are no limit people. These are doers. Doers at the highest level. They know that if anything is going to get changed in life, including themselves, that they can't sit around and complain about it to make it happen. And so they practice. And so you can practice. The things you don't like, complaining, fault-finding, blaming, wishing, hoping, they're all the tools that neurotics use. Whereas highly functioning, no-limit people are those who don't have time for the complaints. They somehow, they have almost like an inner sense of their own destiny, an inner sense of their own mission. And they know they've only got so much time. We have a limited amount of time here, and the amount of time that I'm given, is a blessing. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. To me, as Whitman said, every cubic inch of space is a miracle. And anything I don't like, I want to spend my time correcting, changing, making this a better place for myself, for those who are going to follow me here on this planet, for my loved ones. And all of this stuff, you'll find that Nez people kind of just leave when they hear complaining, when they hear people wallowing around, or what I call drapery talk. You ever get into drapery talk? Where people sit around and talk about the drapes, you know, and what color they are and how it goes with this and goes with that. You'll find these people over here, all of a sudden they're in the bathroom, you know. What is he doing in the bathroom now? And I'm just getting to the good stuff, to the drapes, you know? They don't want to hear about that. They're not interested. They're more concerned with trying to write the things. In fact, Maslow talked about this quality. He said that when you're around a person like this, who has no limits on where he can go or she can go, and there's no sexual difference here, men and women can share it equally. When you're around a person like that, you're suddenly aware, no matter where you are, of being around a very, very special person. You're a school teacher. There's usually in the school one teacher, maybe two, that the kids kind of gravitate toward, that kids want to be around. For some reason, they know that this person isn't going to judge them, isn't going to be... This isn't the easy teacher. This isn't the teacher who's trying to make friends by having all the kids on her side or his side. This is the person... Wherever they go, if they're in a school and it's half black and half white and there's conflicts there racially, that the black kids know that they can go to this person. Whether the person is white or black, it doesn't matter. And the white kids know that too. And some of the kids who live far away and some of the rich kids and the bright kids and the truant kids, and they all tend to want to be around this very special human being who has these unique qualities of almost being metaphysical. Almost being beyond, or having what I think of as transcended normal. gone beyond that. And you know when you're around a human being like that, that you can't get enough of them. That no matter what they say, or what they're doing, or whatever, and whatever faults they may have, or how much you may dislike what they're saying, or thinking, or doing, that they're inspiring, that they're motivational, that they're exciting, that there's a sense of rubbing off of them. Maslow described some of them. Jesus Christ as a person who was like that. As a human being that had a kind of a charisma that other people were attracted to. And not just religious leaders, but poets and musicians, and even some of the leaders of our times. He described Eleanor Roosevelt as a human being that other people seem to always want to gravitate toward rather than someone else. That there are a few of these people where I part with him dramatically, of course, is in the belief that only a few people can have it. That special quality is there, and it's mostly there because of the things I've been talking about tonight. Because people are willing to do what I've been talking about for the last several hours. They're willing to take the risks. They're willing to consult inside. They're willing to suffer those slings and arrows, and they're not intimidated by anybody else's opinions. Do you know that neurotic people often feel unloved, unappreciated? They feel like other people don't understand them a lot. Someone once asked me, what do you think is the greatest quality of life that a human being can have? And you know, I thought about it. My conclusion was that the ability to enjoy life every day is the greatest quality you can have. Just the ability to enjoy life. Because if you can't enjoy your life, then you are a burden to somebody. To somebody, you're a burden. Usually to a lot of people. And the more burdensome you are to other people, the less you're in that no-limit quality that I'm sharing. This person feels unloved. This person over here doesn't even think about those qualities of being loved or unloved. Just kind of goes through their life neutral. This person knows that they're loved. And knows also that the people who find fault with him or with her are just that. They're just people who are different. They don't have a need to try to get everybody to like them for everything that they do all the time. They're not into that approval-seeking, whining, I've got to get everybody to like me, and so they become people-pleasers. If there's anything you can learn about being no limit, it means to understand that you can never, ever get everybody to like you all the time. When my little girl was 3 years old, we were living out in New York, and would come home to me and say, Billy doesn't like me. Billy doesn't like me. He's doing this, he was doing that, which all kids do. And I would say, do you like you? Rather than saying, let's see what we can do to get Billy to like you, let's see what... Do you like yourself? Well, of course I like myself. Well, what difference does it make what Billy thinks? As long as you feel good about you. And she was used to hearing me talk crazy like that. You know, she'd go back on and she'd accept that. Versus what I want her to learn, just as a little child and grow up with the idea, you just can't get everybody to like you all the time. But you can still feel loved wherever you go, especially if you feel that for yourself. And I think one of the qualities that isolates in this whole paradigm that I'm drawing up here tonight is that a people pleaser is someone who has an opinion for everyone. Okay? And this is a big, big sickness. That is, they say something about what they believe. I believe in, and you name it. I believe in abortion. I believe in prostitution. I believe in drugs. I believe in anything that may be controversial. I believe that capital punishment is good, bad, or whatever. And they will say that. Okay? And then they will hear someone else come back and say, what do you mean you believe in abortion? How can you possibly... Well, I don't mean exactly that I believe in abortion. I believe... Yeah. And suddenly you see them shifting. Because what is going on here is that their self-image, their self-esteem, is not based upon what they feel about themselves. It's based upon how other people react to them. And if somebody else is negative, whether it's a husband, a wife, whether it's your children, whatever, and someone says something that you disagree with, and you find yourself shifting in order to get them to like you, the more you do that, the more you find that you are a people pleaser, having an opinion for everyone, And of course, your self-image is not locked on the self. It's locked in on other people. As I talk about all of these qualities, and I've only gone through 8 or 9, and there are many, many more, I don't want to spend the next 3 weeks here in Detroit talking about them. When I think about what it is, what are these things that make the difference? And as I think out loud here right now, it occurs to me that if you, as you listen right now, choose to believe that you have the potential for being a no-limit human being, that's it. You have isolated the quality that I'm talking about. If you choose anything else, that is to believe from the whole notion of what other people think of you, to trying to get along with the world, to trying to please everybody, whatever that may be, to being the right person, to doing all the things that I talked about in the big chunk of your life, following all of those rules, if you choose to believe that, then all you'll do is convince yourself that you're right and I'm wrong. And what I would say to that is, instead of biting off my finger, what you ought to do is look to where it's pointing. Just ask yourself to what extent you want to change the things in your life about yourself that you don't like. Just ask yourself that. And if any of those come up in a positive way that you would like to change, then you can have it.
I don't think of things as faults, what is missing in your life, because I don't think anything is missing. I think everything that you are is what you've chosen to be up until now. And you may be chronically late, for example, or you may be somebody who wastefully spends their money, maybe someone with a bad temper, and you might label these things as faults. On the other hand, if you do, then you're operating from this premise that where I am is somehow deficient and I got to repair these deficiencies, which I just talked about. And it's much more effective to look at yourself as, how can I grow in these dimensions? This is what I am. This is what I do. I don't like this about myself. Rather than labeling it as a deficiency, labeling it as the choices that I've made up until now. And I think I'll work on new choices. You see, anything you have in life, you can state in positive or negative terms. Negative is a fault. Positive is just growth. We were in Hawaii, and I saw one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. It was a store, a little gift shop, and outside they had a sign. And the sign said, please enjoy your food and drinks outside the store. In other words, it didn't say, no, you can't come in the store, and how dare you, if you come in, we'll arrest you, and no food in the store, and all of that. It stated in a positive way what it was that they wanted and what their policy was. You hear people talking about a war on drugs. You know, as soon as you have a war, you have to choose up sides. And you have to have a winner and a loser, and you have to have armaments, and the drugs will continue to go on as long as there's a war. If we could phrase it in a positive way, let's focus on raising a drug-free culture. How many people out there are against terrorism? I mean, who isn't against terrorism? We're all against terrorism. But that's one of the reasons we continue to have terrorists and we continue to have war in the world, because so many people are against it. If everybody who was against terrorism would phrase it in terms of, I'm for peace, and devote their whole life, or their energy, the same energy that they devote against terrorism, for peace, and work for peace, and imagine thousands and millions and of people working for peace instead of against terrorism, we would have a peaceful world. I mean, if you look at the statistics, for every dollar we spend on peace, we spend $2,000 on war. And that's why we have guns and ammunition and bombs and nuclear weapons and all of the things that could destroy us, because we're always focused on what we're against instead of what we're for. So the areas that you can grow in your life, look at them. I would like to be less dogmatic in my relationship with my wife. Instead of putting it into a negative, say, I am going to work on being a more pleasant person. I'm going to work on that. I am going to work at arriving on time instead of berating myself for being tardy and late all the time. I am going to spend more time working on this particular project that I'm involved in, writing this book or whatever it may be. I am going to devote more time to my children instead of I don't spend enough time with them. In other words, you state it in a positive way. And then you don't have to think of yourself as flawed. It's a perfect universe. It's a perfect world. It all works on harmony. It's all presented to us as this perfect system. Each one of us is a part of the perfection of it. The universe doesn't make any mistakes. See yourself that way, and then see yourself as making new and growth-producing choices rather than repairing faults and deficiencies. And you'll see yourself growing and growing and growing, and the things that used to immobilize you and depress you and get you upset and that you used to call faults, or you used to call flaws, no longer are seen that way. They're just seen as choices that you made along the way.